America don't really fully appreciate, I think, is not just that he was elected president and what a great victory it all was, but the tremendous pressure South Africa was under from white capital, from American business, to try to restrain the reforms that they wanted to put in place. And that led to a kind of neoliberalism, which is in effect in South Africa, which has limited their ability to fight poverty, limited their ability to deal with a lot of issues, which has led to the kind of corruption that we've seen in many other places in the world.
Danny, we're going to end today's broadcast with your documentary, Countdown to Freedom. In it, you, Danny Schechter, ask Nelson Mandela about the type of world that he wants to leave behind.
Our world, the world that we are visualizing, is expressed in our Freedom Charter, a land in which the principle is entrenched that South Africa belongs to all its people. A land where there is a Bill of Rights that defends the rights of every individual, irrespective of his color. A multi-party system, regular elections, the proportional representation, and the entrenchment of property and of religious beliefs. That is the world I believe in.
And it's happening.
It is happening.
That was Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela died on Thursday at the age of 95. The world mourns his death. Danny Schechter, thanks so much for being with us. Documentary filmmaker made 6 nonfiction films of Mandela, including Mandela in America. His latest book was just published this week. It's called Madiba, A to Z, The Many Faces of Nelson Mandela, published in conjunction with the film that's opening all over the country, Mandela, Long Walk to Freedom. And also special thanks to Father Michael Lapsley, speaking to us from Cape Town, South Africa. That does it for the show, but not for our coverage. Of course, we'll be covering all the events leading up to the funeral for Nelson Mandela. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aramate Nermin-Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Samal Kalfani Masood, Rabbi Karen, Dina Gezder, Amy Littlefield. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley, I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is approximately 8:02. Coming up is Positively Revolting right after this.
Tune in every Friday at 3 p.m. for Roots of Rock and Roll. Dale Farr and Steve Bricker play rare and vintage records from rhythm and blues, jump blues, rockabilly, and doo-wop. From the birth of rock and roll, the 50s and early 60s. Roots of Rock and Roll, only on KBOO Portland.
This Tuesday morning from 8 to 9 on the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, our guest will be Penny Allen. She'll be discussing her film work and her knowledge of Europe, North Africa, and the situation in that region. Don't miss the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with Penny Allen from 8 to 9 this Tuesday morning.
KBOO is proud to present one of the greatest jazz films ever made, Round Midnight. Join us Thursday, December 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater for this 1986 American-French film that captured the Paris jazz scene of the 1950s. Watch jazz legend Dexter Gordon deliver an Oscar-nominated performance. Round Midnight, the Clinton Street Theater, Thursday, December 12th at 7 p.m., 2522 Southeast Clinton.
In conjunction with KBOO's presentation of Round Midnight at the Clinton Street Theater, tune in Wednesday afternoon, December 11th, when KBOO Jazz host Rita Rega talks with bassist Chuck Israels about his experiences in the Paris jazz scene in the 1950s, playing with pianist Bud Powell, the real-life inspiration for the film. That's Wednesday afternoon, December 11th, between noon and 2 p.m. on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
Good morning. It's 8:08 on this frosty cold. If you like snow, it's a great day morning. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio on KBOO in Portland. I am Lynn. I am here with Ani. And before we get in with our guest, I just want to let folks know it's supposed to be a few snow showers till about 10. And if you can just sort of hang out at home and watch that and apparently the traffic is very interesting outside because we of the Pacific Northwest are unfamiliar with this thing coming from the sky called snow. But in the meantime, I just want to introduce our guest this morning, Miriam Germain. She's a very busy woman. She is a member of No Nukes Northwest and the founder of radcast.org and the new blog site, Radcast and Radical Consciousness. She's radioactive. We're probably all radioactive these days. Anyway, we want to talk about many things, but we're going to talk about the public forum to discuss nuclear madness. And this event is focused on speakers answering your questions about Fukushima, Hanford, and the Columbia Generating Station. I'll let Miriam, you take it away, babe. Tell us about this event.
Well, first of all, good morning, and to both of you, Lynn and Ani. Ani, great, you made it. I came in from St.
She had to get a professional bus driver to get her here this morning.
Yeah, yay, Teresa. So, yeah, we're having an event on December 10th.
From 6:30 to 9:30 p.m.
Right, at the First Unitarian Church in downtown Portland.
Mm-hmm. Elliott Chapel.
Thank you.
101 Southwest 12th.
I'm so glad you have the poster in front of
you
because I don't. That's great. And I, having done this for a while, being in the anti-nuke world and political world, I've come to a place where I stopped wanting to just hear people speak at these gatherings and, you know, for an hour at a time and not have time to ask questions. So we decided this time to reverse the situation and have people come in with questions and have them answered. And so most of the event will be about that. So in the course of today's interview on KBOO, it'd be great if you guys have questions, write them down, and if we don't answer them, bring them to the event on Tuesday night.
Because there is so much misinformation about what's going on with radioactivity from all those different, from Fukushima, what's happening at Hanford, extreme misinformation.
Yeah, and I know that people still aren't quite aware that Hanford is a nuclear waste site and probably the most contaminated in the Northern Hemisphere.
Rather leaky, isn't it?
Very leaky. And they're also not aware that we have something called the Columbia Generating Station, which is a nuclear power plant on the Hanford Reserve, 10 miles from Hanford's leaking tanks, which also sits on 11 fault lines.
11?
And, mm-hmm. And there's 11 that run through the Hanford Reserve.
Do they converge or something?
Yeah. And the Columbia Generating Station, I might as well just get into it right now.
Why
the
not?
Columbia Generating Station is a GE boiling water reactor. It's a Mark II, and Fukushima Daiichi Power Plant is a Mark I. The designs are very similar. And most of the problem that went down at Fukushima had to do with the earthquake, not the tsunami. The tsunami definitely played its role and played a big part, but the earthquake is what cracked the fuel pools and did things like that that created incredible devastation, followed by the tsunami. And our issue with CGS, the Columbia Generating Station, which I will refer to as CGS, has the potential of creating the same kind of disaster, and we hold more fuel rods, spent fuel rods, at CGS than Fukushima Daiichi. So if an earthquake should occur.
Or when,
and off of our coast, I don't mean one in the middle of Washington, we will be affected, CGS will be affected, and we know this now. There's a new study that Physicians for Social Responsibility paid for with geologists from University of Washington to find out if an earthquake coming from the ocean off of our coast, off of the Washington coast, is larger than a 7.2 or is a 7.2, will that affect CGS? And CGS has been built for, I think, a 6.2. So it will definitely be affected. And that quake coming off of the coast will affect the fault lines all the way out there. And if CGS is affected and there is an event due to an earthquake or anything else, remember, the Hanford tanks are 10 miles from CGS.
And I just want to, you know, language, it's one of those things I want to pay attention to. And Helen Caldicott, who, of course, is like, you know, grandmother of all anti-nuke activists, always talked about euphemisms and how we should never use euphemisms. And the thing that I'm just picking up here is the event. I mean, when we're talking about an event like cracking, you know, nuclear generating stations and those spent fuel rods that are then, not contained, right?
Right.
It's not just like, wow, that's an occurrence. You know, like, what happens? What happened at Fukushima, first of all? I mean, we have this example as very recent memory, but it's one of those things that's so horrific. People just sort of Oh, yeah. Things happened. It was bad. What happens during those events?
Well, the first thing, there's a few things to know from the top. And one is that those rods need to stay in water that is at a certain temperature to control the nuclear reaction that is occurring within those rods themselves. So without the water, those rods start immediately to heat up at great speed and great degree. And there's a coating on those, the zirconium coating on those rods. When that is exposed to air, they burn immediately. So when there was a crack in the pool and the water was starting in Building 4 to leak out, that zirconium created a fire. And this is what we're all surmising because this is the information we have, and the type of explosions that went down are, you know, they're hydrogen explosions. And the interesting thing about that, so before I move on to the FOIA accounts, because it has to do specifically with the FOIA accounts, what you're asking, Ani,
mm-hmm.
These fires are so hot that they create further fires, and they can keep going, and you can't just put these fires out with water. It's just not possible. So the fires just go, and we have what happened at Fukushima. We have these big explosions, these hydrogen explosions, and that goes up into the jet stream and later it comes down, and
we call that the fallout.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that did happen when we talk about the event in Japan is listed in great detail in the FOIA accounts, in the FOIA documents that were released, I don't know if it was a year or 6 months ago, but it's been a while. We've had plenty of time to look at these. And I'm sorry, I can't remember the date that those came out, but I have them, other people have them. Informable online on Facebook has them. I encourage people to go to Informable about that because the folks over there have parsed them and pieced them together in ways that are easy to understand. And I put some of those here so I can talk about them, but it speaks specifically about what happened in the fuel pools that nobody's really talking about. And this is the elephant in the room when people discuss what happened. And it's so important to recognize that the water in Building 4 evaporated or just disappeared, went away because there was a crack in the pool. When there's a crack in anything that holds water, the water's going to go away. And when that happened, the rods were exposed and these hydrogen explosions took place. So some of the transcripts from the NRC are with members, or they're all with members of the NRC. Chuck Casto is a primary character in these. And one of the things that he says, I'm not going to get into all of these because there's too many, but one of the things he says is, for me, I'm ever more convinced that there's nothing there. He's speaking about the water in the fuel pool in 4. There's major damage to that building, and I just have to stake my career on it. The reason that I'm sharing these with you is that we talk about the fuel pool in 4 as if there's something there today that the workers are removing, that there are rods in there. And this creates a real problem for those of us who watch this with understanding, are there rods there? How can there be rods there if everything was dry in that pool and we know that the zirconium would blow and so on? So we don't have an answer to this. And the people who have the answers to this are definitely TEPCO, and they just lie, unfortunately, with everything they say, rather than asking for help. We don't know if folks like Arne Gundersen have an answer to this or not, if they were told, if they've read the FOIA accounts. And I say this...
Now, who is Arne Gundersen for folks who may not know?
Arne Gundersen is one of our most renowned nuclear engineer whistleblowers who, after Fukushima happened, decided that, recognized that nuclear power cannot be seen ever as a safe method to
boil water. And I thought we
were
past that anyway. Yeah, right.
Well, when he saw that every single fail-safe method failed in case of a meltdown, he realized that there is nothing that we can do to prevent such a thing in the future. You know, that everything you think you can come up with to prevent a meltdown from happening is nothing more than what you hope.
It's too big. That kind of power is just too big to contain. And the hubris of folks to think that you can. But anyway, you were explaining about Arne Gundersen.
Yeah, so what we need at this point, and I stress this, is we need people, we need Arne to come forward and say, you know, yes, I read the FOIA documents, and this is what I think, having read the FOIA documents. Or, no, I haven't read the FOIA documents, but I will because it's really important. And we need a firsthand account of what actually happened in four so that the rest of us who do follow this have a clear answer on what happened. And the reason we don't have a clear answer isn't just that TEPCO lies. It's that we see videos that have been put out by TEPCO inside Building 4 about the fuel pool and what it looks like today. And when we look at these things and we look at what happened in the original disaster, we look at that and we say, how is this even possible that it looks so good and so brand new?
So how would people find those? Can you find them online, those videos that you're talking about?
You can go to, I think that those videos, they're cams. They're the TEPCO cams. And if you look up TEPCO cam, they'll come up. There's a couple different ways to view those. And you might have to download something on your computer so that you can access it. But they're open. They're 24/7. At least that's what they say. And this comes back to the same thing. They tell you they're 24/7. But when you have people who study these cams every day, and they see repeat images, they know that, and they put that out. Let's see, Radchik does some things on that. Marushka does some things on that. All these people are on Facebook, you know, and they spend their time viewing what is happening over there so that
the rest of us can have lives.
I look at these stills that people post, my teachers post, you know, and I look at that and go, boy, you know, thank God that you know what you're talking about because I don't know what I'm looking at, you know. And again, these people do this 24/7 just about, you know, they're always looking at the cams. So the cams, even though they say they're 24/7, aren't necessarily, and there is a very strong belief that TEPCO isn't showing us what's real. They're showing us fake films to make us think everything's fine, which completely makes sense because that's what the nuclear industry does anyway. No matter what happens, you'll be fine. In fact, after Fukushima happened, Arne Gundersen with Fairwinds went to Seattle with a team of people to look into the soil, look into different filter systems that people were just catching air through. Mm-hmm. And they put them through a spectrometer to see what isotopes they could find. And there was plutonium in those. And so we know that through the jet stream, that stuff blew up into the sky, came down over here in the Northwest, and people were breathing in, like, 10 particles a day into their lungs of plutonium and other things as well. I don't know if he found, I'm sure he found cesium if he found plutonium, but I don't know. He has those listed. You can find those on Fairwinds. So I just don't even know where to go with this except to say that we need the truth and we need an international team of people who are respected by the community to go in, and Arne would be one of those people for sure. He could lead that team, you know, to be able to go in, get suited up, take video cameras in that can withstand the heat in there, and show us what's going on. But TEPCO won't allow that, and neither will the Japanese government. And of course, now the Japanese government has gone full throttle with their secret, you know, secret, we won't let any information out, new law. Do you know about that?
No, I don't. I was going to say, would you elaborate on that? I bet we have a listener or two who may not know about that.
The Japanese government has finally recognized that what is going on at TEPCO is so bad that we really can't know any more than we already know. And what we already, I feel like, who was that, Rumsfeld? We can't know what we don't know if we don't know what we do know that we don't know. Well, that is...
Oh, it's haiku. Haiku time.
He could have applied that to this situation. So we don't know if what we know is the truth or not. And if we had a team in and I personally would love to have a team, at least with many people from Germany, since Germany has decided after Fukushima happened to shut down its nuclear power plants, to have people go in and let us know, hey, you know what? The pool has been rebuilt. There are rods in there. There is no pool. Whatever it is that they find, just tell us the truth so that we can move on from speculating. But now we're not going to know anything because the Japanese government decided that if anyone, from reporters to workers to anyone else, has any information on what's going on, including numbers, radiation readings, if any of that goes out and those people are found out, they will go to jail. And this is slightly different from what they've employed in the beginning, which was a gag order against the medical profession in Japan. They're not allowed to tell their patients that anything they have is related to radiation.
Right.
And if they do find things, for instance, a higher thyroid disease count in patients, they're not allowed to tell the world that. So they'll lose their licenses. So that gag order was already in place. We also know that there was nothing in place where we were getting correct information to start with. So I look at that as part of the gag order. We're just going to keep the lie going. And now it's just more definitive. And now they're calling attention to themselves by saying that you will be arrested.
Wow. Are you going to ID? Go ahead.
I was exactly going to do just that very thing.
I saw you taking a breath. I figured.
You know, it's good to breathe before one speaks. Although this topic is leaving me pretty breathless,
I know,
I
was going to say. It's taking my breath away.
It is about 8:26 in the morning. You are listening to your very own community radio station. We call it KBOO. This is Positively Revolting, and I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And we are here this morning with Miriam Gurman, who is a member of No Nukes Northwest. She's also the founder of radcast.org. There is a new blog about rad counts and actually coming to consciousness of living in an irradiated world. And we'll be talking about all this and more. Your calls are also invited at 503-231-8187. Give us a ring this morning. Ask us your questions, your comments. And also, I have to say, you can follow Positively Revolting on Facebook. You can like us there, where you can find us at facebook.com/Positively Revolting. And you can also email us. That's right. You can email us at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. So,
and we are on the Twitters.
We are. Positive Revolt. You'll find us there. So let's go ahead. And we actually have a caller this morning. Let's get the ball rolling there. And let's talk to Harvey. Good morning. You're on the air. Harvey will be on the air. I have great faith and confidence. While Harvey,
hello,
are you there?
Hello.
Good morning, Harvey.
Hey, Harvey.
Hi there, Ani and Miriam. The problem here is that as global warming increases, the polar caps are melting, and this creates more shifting in the Earth's tectonic plates. And the nuclear power plants on our side are part of the Pacific Ring of Fire. The same thing like Fukushima. So we can expect bigger earthquakes bigger and more often earthquakes. So that's one scary thing. Number two, the latest kitchen accessory in Japan is a Geiger counter. And I wondered, you know, like whether, you know, we have all these desal plants up and down the West Coast. And I wrote a letter to Dr. Helen Caldicott, and I said, can radioactive material get through desal plants? And her answer was yes. Yes, radioactive material can go through the membrane. They're particles so small that they're smaller than the salt particles. So people will be drinking perhaps radioactive water from desal plants. And with the Fukushima plume coming our way in 2014. And you know, there's just so much bad news. Like one of the problems I find is that, and I look for problems that aren't even discussed. One of the problems is that we have saltwater intrusion into, populations around the coast suck up the freshwater aquifers, the recharge rate is kind of slow, and so you get saltwater intrusion. Well, with the Fukushima event, you're going to get radioactive saltwater intrusion into the freshwater aquifers.
And it's already there.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, these are just, you know, we're going to be drinking the poisons, the toxic poison. And I would recommend a Geiger counter for everybody to have to test their foods and waters. I recommend that.
Okay, so what do you do then when, with your Geiger counter, when you find that?
I'll answer that. First of all, it's important to know that, Harvey, everybody, I believe, should have a Geiger counter and one that is reliable. In fact, later today, I just created the blog for Radcast last night. Later today, I will be posting the Geiger counters that we recommend. And we've done a lot of research on those, and everything that we put up on there will be worthwhile looking into. But it's important to know that none of these Geiger counters can really test anything that's going on in food. If the counts are that strong, it will detect something, but you won't know what it is you're detecting. But at that point, it's not really all that important. It's important to know that, wow, there's a lot of particles in there, and I'm not going to touch that. But normally, Geiger counters are not what we look at to test what we're eating at all. You need a spectrometer for that. And in order to have those start at $5,000 or $6,000. The job of testing our food and our water is the government's job. And at this point, I don't trust what the EPA readings are. We've been doing a lot of research. My teachers have been doing a lot of research on that. And they're not doing a job where if they have the results, that we know the results. I don't know what's in our water. I don't know what's in our soil. I know that they don't tell us, and I know that they must be testing. And that's really important, and I don't have any problem saying that because I don't know what the results are. Ani, do you know what the results are?
I don't.
Lynn, do you?
No.
Yeah, see, there's three people right here, and I bet if we asked everybody at KABU, nobody would know what the results were. And
we consider ourselves relatively informed. I just want to say we're active.
Yeah.
No idea.
So the Geiger counters will tell us what is passing by our meter. It's important to understand this. It's not going to tell us what is in the city overall. Mm-hmm. It's going to tell us in our little location what is crossing by our meter. And the more people we have with Geiger counters who can communicate to all of us with what they're seeing, mm-hmm, makes the picture the whole. And that is why everybody needs a meter.
It sounds absolutely right to me. I just want to leave on a positive note that solar is safe nuclear. The sun is a nuclear reactor, and the solar panels are 93 million miles away. We pick up the radiation, and we turn it directly into electricity. Solar is safe nuclear.
Thanks, Harvey.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I did just get an email this morning from through Radcast with somebody who makes solar panels for the people, meaning that they are more inexpensive. I don't know much about him at the moment, but I will be checking in on that. And I think we have another caller, too.
It's true. Also, I just wanted to say, Teresa, host of Press Watch. Well,
and
ever present.
Yes,
in our lives.
Present, yes.
Teresa has sent in a comment saying that she's been averaging 22 counts per minute outdoors. She has a Geiger counter. She uses it relentlessly.
And she's not afraid to use it.
What part of Portland?
She brings it to parties, trust me.
What part of Portland is Teresa in?
Well, that's a good question, Teresa. You're listening. I'm guessing that actually I know that we are in inner south. Well, no, deep sort of southeast.
Okay,
the call it 72nd and Foster.
Okay, the counts over by Powell Butte. We mm-hmm. have a reader from Powell Butte. Are always around 25 CPM. We can mm-hmm. count on that. When those go up, that's a flag if those go up. Uh-huh. So that's just beyond where Teresa is. Mm-hmm. And I have a Radcast for today that will be played on KABU News in the afternoon. And the read from Powell Butte is 25 with a spike at 42. If we're in my neighborhood from my counter this morning, it was my average is 33. and my high is 52. So North Portland, where I am, has a higher radon count, I believe, and we're not shielded by the butte.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things matter, which is why when I say that the more people we have who have meters, the more understanding we have of what is going on in the entire city.
Right.
Or of anywhere.
Right, right. It's not just one of those things you can get an accurate view knowing that this corner, you know, you get an accurate view for that corner.
Exactly.
But you need a bigger picture. Yeah. I'm also pretty aware of the fact that Teresa takes her Geiger counter everywhere and will do readings all over town. So we don't know where she's been averaging the 22, but she'll probably chime on in here any minute now. And Harry, we have Harry on the line. Good morning, Harry.
Oh, good morning, everyone. Yeah, I have three questions. The first question is Hanford in Oregon or Washington or both?
Oh, that's a good question, because we said that assuming, and you should never assume, Hanford is in Washington. But there the glory of Hanford spreads everywhere, wouldn't you say, Mary?
Well, not only does it spread everywhere, but it is located and cooled. Well, CGS, which is also on Hanford's land, is cooled by the...
And why don't you say what that is again, just because for folks who may have just tuned in.
The Columbia Generating Station, which is the nuclear power plant right near Hanford, both are in Richland on the Hanford Reserve, receives its cooling water from the Columbia River. When Hanford leaks, the plume from those tanks that are leaking heads into the Columbia. And we're trying very hard right now to follow that plume, which hasn't hit the Columbia yet. But I believe it will, because nobody's figured out a way to stop this from happening. And not to mention the fact that, you know, once the double shell tanks start to leak, which they have already, into the ground and into the groundwater, adding to that plume, you know that the other tanks, the other 19 of those or 18 of those, there's 20 double shell tanks, will also start to leak, because they were all made at the same time and they all hold highly radioactive waste.
So the Columbia Generating Station is in Washington.
It is in Washington as well. It's 10 miles from the Hanford Nuclear Waste Site.
Okay. Okay, the next question is Trojan. Even though we closed Trojan, we still have nuclear waste on the Trojan site. They have these casks that are there, and no one's removed them.
Well,
and they're out there, out in the open. It's the kind of thing, if you have these spent fuel rods in cement castings out in the open, instead of in a building, or maybe even ship them to Hanford. I was just wondering why it's still there.
Well, first of all, Hanford is no longer a repository for incoming highly radioactive fuel. I believe they still receive low-level radioactive supplies, you know, from hospitals and things like that. And I'm not even positive today if they're still doing that. I can't remember. But my question back to you, and my comment to you, is first of all, do come on Tuesday night to the event at the church, because one of the people who shut down Trojan will be one of our panelists. And Lloyd Marbet would love to talk with you about that. He knows everything about that and is the person to speak to. But my question to you regarding that and Trojan, how would you like that waste that's kept in the dry casks to be transferred? And where would you like it to go? To me, when I think of that, I think of highways, I think of communities, I think of trucks in the winter, you know, colliding, mm-hmm. crashing. So these are really important questions to think about, rather than just saying, well, boy, we don't want that fuel over there. Where exactly do you want it?
But when they dismantled Trojan, the area where the fuel rods was, the engine, well, they actually took that and on a barge, and they shipped it to Hanford, and they buried it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering, well, how come they didn't take the rest of it too, you know?
Well, come on Tuesday night. I don't know. My background isn't exactly everything that happened at Trojan. I can answer questions more specifically to Hanford and CGS and Fukushima.
Okay.
But I encourage you to come on Tuesday night.
Thank you. I have one more question about Fukushima. If the fuel rods have left the tank and or hit the ground, and they're in the ground, and because of gravity, isn't it just going deeper and deeper into the Earth?
Yes.
And so until it hits the Earth's core, and then we blow up?
Well, you know, this has never happened before. So that's one
There's
thing
theory,
to remember.
But there is no practice so far.
What we know is they cannot locate the corium in 1 and 2, or in 3, where the corium has escaped the containment.
So how do we know that?
Well, we know they can see what's in the basement. They know what the numbers are. They know what the tritium counts are, and all of those things tell you what's going on. The higher the tritium count goes. And the higher the different fission nuclides that are being read come out, the more they know that the heat is growing and growing and growing, and that tells them that there's no containment.
Are they still dumping water on it, though?
Yes.
They said they're still pumping water in to keep everything cool, so it's going deeper into
the ground. That's what they say, but the water doesn't go there. So the idea is that the corium will hit the ocean if it hasn't done that yet, because Fukushima is right on the ocean. It's just on sand, and below the sand is the aquifer that feeds water to Tokyo.
Oh, okay. Thank you for answering my questions.
You're welcome.
Okay,
doesn't some of the, to me, kind of the ultimate in denial is, aren't the Olympics happening in Tokyo at some point soon? I mean, that is like, to me, that couldn't be a better example of denial, if you want to.
Many of us decided, I think that that's just a ploy to make everybody believe that everything's fine, so that we're distracted by it. But fortunately, people are at least smart enough to be asking the question, what do you mean the Olympics are going to be, you know, right near this disaster? So we'll see what happens. But I have my money on that the Olympics will not be there.
Let's go ahead. And we have so much to talk about, and only 18 minutes left to do it. That's right. You're listening to KBOO, your community radio station. This is Positively Revolting. I'm Ani. I'm here with Lynn. Our guest is Miriam. We are talking about living in an irradiated world, being aware of how irradiated it is, and also a public forum happening next week. We call it Tuesday night, the 10th. It's happening at the First Unitarian Church, Elliott Chapel, at Southwest 12th, 1011 Southwest 12th. It's 6:30 to 9:30 next Tuesday.
Bring your questions.
No Nukes Northwest Public Forum on Nuclear Madness. We have Carla, who has been waiting. Good morning, Carla. You're on the air. Good morning, Carla. While we are getting Carla, we are, let me ask you this, Miriam. So we sort of danced around the edges of this earlier. We know that the world is irradiated. We know that, Fukushima happened before Fukushima. There was Chernobyl before that. There were many other things. You know, we can go back to, what was that? Three Mile Island when I was 12. You know, like, we know that nukes are not sustainable and that they've been poisoning us for some time. Hey, Carla, we'll get to you in just 1 second. Thanks very much. What do we do with this information? Like, now that we know that we're really kind of screwed.
I know.
What do we do with this information?
Yeah.
Well,
have a party? What?
I mean, we need to be, I'm not saying we should hide our heads in the sand. That doesn't work. Like, you know, but
because
it gets in the sand. Thank you, Lynn.
You're welcome.
Very astute. But it's, you know, when you talk about nuclear madness, that goes to a lot of different levels for me, because it's one of those things where I think it's absolutely important to have the blinders off to see what is real around us and how incredibly messed up it is. But how do we live with that information? How do we go forward and do what we need to do?
We have to figure out how what we want for our lives in this new reality. If you want to pretend that, well, you know, or not even pretend, some people might want to say, you know what, there's nothing we can do about it. I'm just going to keep living the way I'm living. That's great. That's fine. That's what you want to do. If you want to figure out a way to protect your kids from being even more you know, contaminated by radiation than they already might have been.
And children are more vulnerable.
They are more vulnerable. Then you get a Geiger counter so that you know what the readings are in the rain. And if your kid has a soccer game, for instance, you might say, you know what? You know, Susie, you can't go play soccer today because the rain is hot, and you can tell your friends that, but I'm not letting you go out in the rain. You can clean kids off with different things, but it's sort of like duck and cover, you know. How much does that really do? You can find out what foods that you should avoid in the current time. Like, we know that California navel oranges have cesium in them. Almonds from California. There's a lot of foods in California. You can look these up. They're online. Of course, the fish. Mm-hmm. You can stop eating fish. It'd be a fine time to stop eating all
migratory
fish.
Migratory fish in particular, yeah. Huh?
But then you get to a point where you say, well, am I going to be able to eat? Well, this is what our governments have done to us.
Right.
They decided to open this can of worms, and here we are. So you can take supplements to try to pump up your immune system so that your cells aren't quite as affected by cesium and things like that that come in. But in the long run, this is what's going on. So I don't have an easy answer. This is the world we live in.
There is no easy answer that I can think of.
No, you can't get rid of this stuff. We've got 250,000 years at a minimum to wait for the half-life for the plutonium dust, which has fallen in Tokyo from the fuel rod specifically. It's called black dust, for that to go away. Kids are playing in that. Black dust, you can look that up too. Arnie talks about that on Fairwinds, and Paul Gunter talks about that on Beyond Nuclear. You can find lots of information on the black dust.
All right. Let's go ahead and talk, see if Carla's there again. Let's check in on Carla. Good morning, Carla.
Hello, anybody there?
Well, let's move on. Moving on from Carla to perhaps Mike. Good morning, Mike. Are you there?
Hello? Anybody can hear me?
Yeah. Okay, we're going to figure out that little issue. And meanwhile, Lynn, over
yes.
to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ani. Coming up, why don't we talk about what's coming up this morning on KABU. At 9 on APA Compass, musician Simon Tam describes his ongoing legal action to trademark his band's name, The Slants. I love that. Vanita Gupta, ACLU deputy director, speaks about her efforts to improve the racial inequities in the criminal justice system. Filmmaker Vu Phan talks about his film Sway of the Knife, and we hear a year and edition of Heart to Heart with Ka. At 10, it's Air Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. And at 10:15, Flashpoints features a recent talk by radical political analyst Michael Parenti, who talks about his life and his new memoir, which should be good. I love thee, Michael. And at 11 on It Takes a Village, host Shahid Hamid speaks with local rappers Reggie and Robert Watkins of Get It Squad, or GIS, about their music. Thank you for listening to KABU Community Radio. We appreciate it. And thank you so much, KABU members, for your generous support. If you are not a KABU member, stay home on this nice cold day and become one. You can just do it easily in your little jammies by clicking KBOO.fm and click on Donate Today. It's easy, it's fun, and makes you feel better in the morning. That's what I say. So, Back to what we were speaking about.
I would love to share something that came in this morning. First of all, to the KABU listeners, you are my community and I am your community. And I want to thank everybody for listening to this show and supporting this show. It's one of my faves on KABU. With Radcast, this is one of the reason that Radcast came into being is to help people understand that radiation is not only a part of your world today, but how you can live in it and around it and move through it. And I got an email this morning from a man named Mark in Philadelphia, which is where I'm originally from. And I'm going to share this with you. He told me I can share it with you. And he says, hi, I live outside Philadelphia, PA. I have an inspector alert, which for those of you who don't know, is a wonderful Geiger counter. I also have the Inspector Plus. It is raining here today. I just took some wet leaves and put them in a Ziploc bag and ran a 10-minute test on them. My background numbers in the office are average 61 CPM. That's counts per minute. My result on the leaves was 2,075, or when you put that into a 10-minute count, 207 CPM. What are your thoughts? And this is why RadCast exists. When people start to understand that they need to look into the rain, they need to look into outside their window or inside their house for what the radiation readings are, and those readings are higher than what you've already determined, which is called your average, your background average. It's important to know that. All this stuff will be on RadCast for you to understand later. You can get in touch with us and say, how do I make sense of this? These numbers are very high. And so Mark and I spoke this morning, and we worked out a protocol for him to follow for the rest of today into tomorrow. And we will find out if he, in fact, has a particle in there, if there's just, if it's from radon or whatever. And Mark's understanding will be that much greater with what's going on in his piece of Philadelphia, and he's going to tell his friends, and they're going to say, well, how did you know this? Well, I got a Geiger counter. And I cannot impress upon people enough that it is time to buy meters.
Right.
And we're also going to try, I'm working on this right now, to try to get us meters for a lot less than what they cost you online. I'm hoping that by next week I have information on that, which will be on radcast.org.
Excellent. And I'm going to go ahead and we're going to try for Mike again. Let's try Mike. Good morning. Let's try Joe, actually. It's Joe. I lied. We're moving on. And Joe, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. The Columbia River has been leaking, or the Columbia River. Hanford, that mess up there that's run by these bozos, has been leaking radiation in the Columbia River for a long time, probably since 1942 when they started the Manhattan Project. Approximately 15 to 20 years ago, I read an article in the Oregonian that was buried in the third page of the third section one Sunday morning, and it said that the scrub brush growing along the banks of the Columbia River at the high water level mark had radioactive cesium-137 and americium-141 in it. And if that isn't bad enough, back in 2005, I think, on there's a local cable access show called The Water Spot. At least there used to be. I'm not sure if it's still current anymore. But Kathy Newcomb, who used to be the host of it, had somebody on there with charts and graphs and showing the radioactive plumes, underground radioactive plumes, like an overhead view of the different tanks, some of them single layer, some of them double layer tanks. All of them, not all of them, but just about all of them are leaking. These morons, by the way, have buried medium-level and low-level radioactive waste in unlined ditches within 300 feet of the Columbia River. And then a couple years later, they had a guy, if I remember correctly, his name was Dirk Dunning or something close to that. He was a professional from the Oregon Department of Radiology. Department of the state that he worked for goes around to different nuclear medicine facilities and x-ray machines and like the research reactors that they have. They have a research reactor and a research reactor at Reed College and another one at OSU, Oregon State University.
Joe,
hold on a sec.
Joe, I totally know where you're going with this, and due to time, I'm going to get to what you're talking about, and I'm going to bring some clarity to it, okay? I know Dirk, and yes, he's a really good guy. He provides us with a lot of answers to things. The article you read 20 years ago about time before that was very true. People were, at that time, dumping sorry, sometimes I get something in my ear and I lose my track of thought for a second. Sorry about that. At that time, trucks were coming in and dumping directly into the river. So it's true. The Columbia had radioactive waste dumped directly into the river, directly into unlined ditches at that time. There are actually, you can go to the NRC or you can go to the Hanford whatever it's called, waste site, and they'll show you photos of that. All of that is there. That's not a secret anymore. and it's not allowed anymore either. There's been a remediation program for the Columbia River. They have removed quite a bit of the waste that they could, and that's still underway right now. So if you have more questions about this, and I'm sure you do, again, I encourage you, Tuesday night, come to the Unitarian Church and ask.
Thanks very much. And about the Unitarian Church and Thursday night, one more time. Tuesday night. One more time, Miriam, give all those particulars, if you will.
Miriam doesn't have that right in front of her, but I do.
I was going to say, I do too. Here, Miriam, here's my screen.
Let's not put her on the spot. It is the public forum to discuss nuclear madness. And bring your questions about Fukushima, Hanford, Columbia Generating Station, otherwise known as CGS. Great speakers, Tuesday, December 10th, 6:30 to 9:30 p.m., First Unitarian Church, Elliott Chapel, 1011 Southwest 12th, Portland, Oregon. Everyone is welcome. And your questions in particular, I really like that because there's so little clarity about this and so much cock-a-doo-doo floating around about what a really, really, really important subject. And Miriam, thank you for coming out on this, braving the weather and wearing your giving you a good excuse to wear your shearling coat.
I do want to say just for a quick second that the speakers that we have on the panel are really wonderful. Lloyd Marbet will be there. He's one of our Trojan closers. And he'll be talking. Chuck from PSR is coming out. You can find all of this information online on Facebook. But we're also having a friend, John Bertucci, come up from Fukushima is Here, from the Fukushima Response Campaign in San Francisco. No Nukes Northwest, Radcast, and your questions. And I encourage all of you to become teachers about everything that you've heard today, about what you can find out to answer your questions Tuesday night. Become the teacher for your neighborhood. Create more teachers, you know, so that we all can get the information that we so desperately need right now.
Absolutely. Laura is on the line. We're going to squeeze her in with a last comment. Good morning, Laura.
Hi. Thanks for squeezing me in. The famous thing I've ever heard about a solution to Hanford was from the Nuclear Guardianship Project from the Bay Area, and basically it was storing the waste there safely above ground, not burying it, not forgetting it, but storing it above ground safely as possible, and passing it along in 50-year increments to generations that follow. And, you know, with the message, we couldn't figure this out, but hopefully you can.
Right.
So that it doesn't get lost.
Right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Laura.
That is a really great way to end the show, with something that, not forgetting.
Not forgetting. Well, we can't, because it's going to be with us for...
There's
Ever.
Something about humans and burying things. They think they go away. I don't quite...
right.
Well, maybe it's just a Western culture thing.
One of the things that everybody can do, as far as what can we do, it's everyone's question. You can take part in your city, your state, your most local nuclear reactor, wherever that is in relation to you, and you can start or join a team to shut it down.
There you go. I mean, really, tangible action. Let's do it now more than ever. Miriam, thank you so much for all the work that you do throughout Cascadia and the world. And it's so important. Once again, tell people how they can get in touch with what's going on. No Nukes Northwest and the new Radcast.
You can get in touch. Radcast.org would be info@radcast.org would be the easiest way. And thank you both so much for your wonderful show, for getting the information out there, for having us on.
Well, it's our pleasure. And, you know, because this is such a dire topic, it's really one of the more depressing things I can ever imagine talking about. But it's so important, and we do need to be aware and active. Hello, active. I just got to end on a little levity. So my favorite website at this time of year is itsnowinginpdx.com. You can, in fact, go to this website 24 hours a day, any day of the year, and 99.9% of the time, you will see a very sedate page that just says no in big red print or big white print on a blue background. But go ahead, look at it this morning because it's fun. Okay, and with that, we'll see you next week. Continue
positively
to be
revolting,
positively
as
revolting.
No, this is it.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 19th year of the Portland Revels. The Portland Revels will perform 11 shows between December 6th and December 15th. That's the Portland Revels, December 6th to the 15th at the Scottish Rite Center in downtown Portland. More information about the show can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.